Welcome back to Escape to the Magic Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Randy.
I am Dak.
And this is Ryan.
And this week, we're going to talk to you about five lies you should not believe about Disney.
About vacationing to a Disney park.
I need to re-record that?
No, not at all. That's good.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I got the topic right.
It's almost one and the same, right? We're talking about why people don't vacation to Disney.
I mean, really, the premise is anytime one of us tells someone that we go there frequently, someone else comes back and they tell us all the reasons why they don't.
Yeah. And I think...
And all of their reasons are garbage.
Well, they're lies, which is why we're going to debunk some of these lies today. And I think if you think about it, this episode is really going to be dedicated to all of those people who have coworkers, family members, friends who have said, I will never go to Disney because of insert excuse. Like, that's what I want to talk about, because we go to Disney, not all the time, but we go often. We talk about Disney often. And when our friends find out, oh, you guys go to Disney? You talk about Disney? I just can't do it. Why not? Because of this. Well, a load of hogwash, in my opinion.
So this episode is for all of our listeners, because our assumption is by you listening, you don't believe those lies already. Maybe you do, and so this could help you there. But maybe also some of you are afraid to tell your friends that you go to Disney because you're confronted with these lies, and so you're wondering, well, what am I supposed to say to that?
And I think you could send them this episode once we're done.
Yeah.
You know?
With a nice kick in the shins.
Yeah. Hey, listen to these three dudes who are very handsome who talk about Disney.
It's mine and Dak's haircut is what does it for us here.
We may have to edit that part out anyway.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So We're good to go. All right. Sorry. So the five, like Dak's like, I have something to say. Like,
no, I got it.
Yeah, that was the look, right?
Yeah, that was the look. All right. All right. So breaking down the five lies that you should not believe about vacationing or just Disney. All right. So lie number one. Now I came up with these five lies. Now there are probably a ton more, but I wanted to kind of hit five of the most common that I hear. I know you guys hear, probably a lot of our listeners will hear from, you know, people they talk to about Disney. All right, lie number one, Disney World is just for kids. There's nothing for adults to do there.
That is a lie.
100%, it's a lie.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly there are parts of Disney that are obviously designed for families and kids and all of that, but my take on that is just you have to go and experience it. I think Disney has done a great job of finding something for everyone within the family scheme. I think that part of their marketing strategy, if you will, is to find something for grandma and grandpa to do, for mom and dad to do, and then for kids to do. And I think to just pigeonhole that into, oh, this is just a kid's park, then you have not been to Disney, so you're not really understanding what you're saying. If it were me and I was trying to argue against this, I might say, which I don't believe, but I might say Disney struggles with that teenager group. Just because I think teenagers, like, they've gotten to that stage where they're like, oh, I'm too cool for this.
Well,
right?
I think teenagers start to believe this lie.
Yes. Yeah.
That's really what it is.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
And perhaps some of that influence comes from the older folks who are also perpetuating it throughout the whole thing. But look, I mean, we've talked about this so many times on this show. The whole concept of the park was to have something for everyone, right? Walt's whole vision of this started sitting at a park bench, watching his daughters do something where he wasn't part of that equation. And it was, how do I bring everyone together? And, you know, he saw some of the things that were taking place at amusement parks in Europe already. Conceptually, the ideas were coming to him pretty easy on, hey, how do we have something that is for everyone from, you know, 1 to 99 or whatever the ages that he used? I can't remember. my wife will listen back and she'll be like, how do you not remember that? But, you know, that's the idea. It's for literally everyone.
Yeah. And I think there's this misconception, too, that Disney does not have thrill rides, or that if you want thrill rides, go to Universal, go to Six Flags. Let me throw this at you. So I did some research, right? I took the top five thrill attractions at Universal Orlando, and I compared that to the top five, or, you know, speed-wise, attractions at Disney World, right? So the top five at Universal, we have the Velocicoaster, mm-hmm. Hulk, Rip Rocket, Hagrid's Motorbike Adventure, which is really fun, and Revenge of the Mummy. Those are their top five fastest rides. And if you add up the speed...
And those are all very fun rides.
And they're all very fun rides.
If you like roller coasters.
If you like roller coasters, they're all very fun. If you add up and average out the average mile per hour of those five rides, you get 58.4 miles per hour.
Not, so not your top or just the average speed?
Just the average. Okay. Now you take Disney. You have Test Track. You have Cosmic Rewind. You have Tron. You have Rock and Roller Coaster. And you have Everest. Those are Disney World's top five fastest attractions. If you average out the miles per hour for those five attractions, you get 58.4 miles per hour.
Mm. Oh,
the
snap.
Exact same. Wow. Now, the Velocicoaster at Universal is...
It's
70.
It's a hypercoaster, basically, or at least bordering on a hypercoaster.
But Test Track is... Now, again, I'm not comparing Test Track to the Velocicoaster, right? Velocicoaster's got some inversions and some loops. Yeah. It's amazing.
Corkscrews.
It's amazing.
Feet dangling.
But to...
It's awesome.
Yeah. Hands almost touching the water. Yeah. But to say that Disney World doesn't have thrill coasters or thrill attractions, I'm not even throwing in Tower of Terror, Rise of the Resistance, you know, Flight of Passage, Smugglers. Like, there is a ton of stuff to do there that is thrill based. And dude, I mean, Mission Space Orange, where you can get sick and vomit or pass out, or a little bit of both.
There's no ride on this planet that more people throw up on than Mission Space Orange. I'm convinced. I don't even need to do a scientific survey.
And what was the big deal? We talked about this when they first opened up Cosmic Rewind with...
Yeah, they had to redesign the trash cans.
The trash cans.
The trash can lids.
People were coming off sick.
Now, I'll also say this. I've never actually seen anyone go throw up getting off that ride. Dax talked about being queasy. I've never experienced it. But it's just kind of interesting. I'll say this. I do think it's fair to say that some of those thrill coasters at Universal are more geared towards adults. The height, the minimum height requirement, mm-hmm. for instance, is higher.
Well, and they're a little more intense too.
So the intensity is more extreme. But to say they're not thrill, which is the point you're making, would be a completely inaccurate statement. Disney does have thrill coasters. It does make them in a way that I think is more accessible to people, right? But look, a couple of these, you've still got to be 48 inches, mm-hmm. right? I mean, 48 inches is not for little kids. And so little kids are not riding Expedition Everest at Walt Disney World, despite the fact that it's like the tallest peak in the state of Florida.
Well, and also too, for adults, we have all the festivals they do at Epcot. Let's be honest, Food and Wine is not geared towards kids.
No.
The Festival of the Arts, it's cool, it's fun to look at. It's not geared towards kids. They're not buying the art. The parents are buying the art.
Yeah, that's the direction I was going to go, is if you're just from a different perspective, taking the thrill rides and the, you know, amusement roller coaster park side out of it, there's so many festivals and so many different things that adults can do at Epcot, and I would say outside of Epcot. I just think there's again, Disney has specifically gone in with the mindset of, I'm going to create an environment where mom and dad have entertainment, grandpa and grandma have entertainment, and the kids have entertainment. And I'd even throw out a different perspective, unless you have more to cover on the festivals, Ryan. But I think for me, part of my enjoyment as an adult, as a dad, is seeing my kids experience some of these things. That's been some of my core memories, is being at the parks and watching my girls experience a princess meet and greet or a character meet and greet, and they just, it's like Christmas morning, right? They come out and they're so excited and they're just thrilled. And so I get personal enjoyment out of that. And I don't know if that's the total opposite of what we're saying here that makes it a kids park only, but I think there's enjoyment that dads and moms can get out of the parks outside of just your own personal coaster rides or whatever.
And I think that's totally a fair point. I think also that was a big part of the magic that Walt was trying to capture. But you also don't have to have kids to go and have an amazing time at Disney. You don't even have to have anybody else. I mean, I think each of us at given points have done Disney solo. Like, we've done solo days, or at least parts of days that were, and you can still have an absolutely amazing time by yourself with just a group of adults, you know, mixed gender groups, single gender groups. We've done it all, with kids, without kids. The point is that it's not just a kids' park.
Look, some of my best trips have been adult-only trips.
Yep, absolutely.
It's just so freeing and so great. Sorry, girls. But I, like, man, it's so fun to just be there as adult-only and just have that freedom of not having your kids.
So. And to that point, you know, none of us drink, so our enjoyment didn't go from drinking around the World Showcase, right? Like,
right?
It literally was enjoying the rest of what the parks have to offer.
Yeah, so, and bonus lie to go along with that is that Disney adults are weird. That's a total lie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
For the most part, for the most part, yeah. All right, so I would say lie number one, debunked. Disney World is for adults. You can absolutely have a fun time, great time by yourselves, with your kids, with your families, whatever. It's, you can have a good time as an adult. Yep. All right. Lie number two, it's too expensive. What? Well, that's true. Vacationing at Disney is expensive.
That, like, is mostly a lie.
It's mostly a lie. It's expensive. But I think Disney World and the Disney parks, they get a bad rap because they're this big corporate conglomerate, right? And they're just out to make money. But they are expensive. But I think if you start comparing the average Disney vacation to another average vacation just in general, and I had Dak pull some numbers for me. So real fast, according to, and I got two different sources here. So according to Forbes and according to a site called Picasso, .com.
Oh, that sounds legit.
It does sound legit, yeah. The average cost of a family vacation in 2023 was $1,986 per person per week. Okay. That's from two different sources, right? So for a family of four for a week, that's about $8,000. Now, Dak, put on your Disney travel agent hat. What are some stats with a family vacation to Disney?
Yeah, so I pulled some stats just yesterday. So a family of four going in the middle of June, arriving on a Sunday, leaving that Saturday, staying at Art of Animation, which I think if you're staying in the family suites is kind of an upper level value, so a moderate type of price range. You're talking $400 or $500 a night for a hotel room, which I think is generally higher end, right? You can certainly stay at a hotel cheaper, you know, at a La Quinta Inn or something like that for less than $400 or $500 a night. Anyways, my point is, family of four, five park day tickets with hoppers. I think we ran the numbers and it came out about $6,100, $6,200. That's no food or anything like that. That's just parks and resort stay. We ran it with the dining plan and it jumped up to like $7,100 with the quick service dining plan, and then it jumped up to $7,800, $7,900 with the table service plan. You throw in Genie Plus, that's another $400 or so, $500 for averaging $21, $22 a day per person.
You're right around $8,000.
Yeah, you're probably about $8,000 for a week at Disney, staying on site and just doing everything you want to do.
I think the big thing about this part of the discussion is you're going to, there's ways to do all of this, right? You're going to get what you pay for in a lot of instances. I do think it's a very fair statement to say that there are elements of a Disney vacation that are more expensive than you would normally spend in some places, right? So if you want to compare the theme park ticket prices at Disney World to Six Flags, you know, you're going to get a huge disparity. I'm also going to tell you, if you're going to compare your experience, right, in terms of what you actually experience inside the parks, and I'm talking from not just the number and quality of attractions, but to the service, to the cleanliness, to all of that, you're going to get what you pay for. You start to see those sorts of differences there. You know, $400 a night for me seemed like a lot for art of animation. Disney hotels do tend to run a little bit higher, but you don't have to stay at a Disney hotel. There are lots and lots of options. There's also lots of discounts and incentive offers that come up when you do it throughout the year.
Well, I think like right now with their tickets, the $4.99 is a great deal.
Yep. And they do these things, frankly, pretty regularly, yeah. Right? You can usually find something. Disney Vacation tends to be one that you plan out longer in advance as well. So it gives you opportunities to kind of figure out what you're doing. You save longer term, et cetera. But I think when you do it, and Ryan, I think you approach this the right way, which is, well, what does a normal vacation cost for most people anyways? At the end of the day, you're probably going to spend pretty close to the same amount, right?
Yeah.
And I think that if you are smart and you plan it well, you can find ways to save no matter what you do. A Disney vacation is not outside of the realm of most people's opportunity.
And I think that's the point with trying to debunk this lie that it's too expensive. It's expensive, yes, but like you said, comparing it to other types of family vacations that are offered in our country or throughout the world, you're going to be kind of in that same price range, $8,000 to $10,000, depending on your experiences and how you get there and what kind of food you eat. So I think when somebody says to me, oh, I'm never going to go to Disney because it's too expensive. Well, you just traveled to Hawaii last year with your family.
Yeah.
That was an $8,000 to $10,000 trip. Like, it's not going to be that much different in terms of cost going to Disney. So to me, that's just a big lie that we can debunk right now. So
I'll just add one more point, and that is, you know, I think Disney food gets a bad rap as far as cost, but we took our girls to a baseball game. We're here in Houston, so we went and saw the Astros play the Mariners, and I'm telling you what, we dropped probably $200 or so dollars on park food,
like on hot dogs and like your ordinary stuff, right?
It was garbage.
Yeah. Like,
sorry, Astros, Minute Maid Park, but it was horrible food. Like, every single one of us looked at each other and we're like, this is nasty, right? Yeah. And as a dad, I hate that. Like, I hate spending money on food that ends up in the trash or, you know,
yeah, sure,
disgusted or whatever with. And so I just think, yeah, I mean, again, comparatively speaking, you're going to spend a lot of money on food at Disney, but I think you can find way better quality food at Disney than you can at a baseball game or a football game or something like that.
That's an underrated element here. And again, it goes back to what I was saying. You get what you pay for to a certain degree. I actually think in some instances what you're getting at Disney is higher quality than what you would get in another place for the same price. And by the way, you compare it to the other theme parks. I mean, I've recently visited the others, semi-recently, right? I actually found prices for food at Disney to be less than what I was paying for at a Six Flags park, at Universal, and I found the quality of the food, in my opinion, to be, frankly, substantially, not just a little bit, but substantially better.
Well, and right now we're talking about lie number three, which is the food isn't good.
Yeah.
So, okay. Great segue, Dad.
That is a straight-up lie.
Straight-up. It's a 100% straight-up lie, and I would agree with you, too, about other places that Six Flags, SeaWorld, the prices are going to be about the same, maybe even a little more expensive at times, and you're getting theme park food, which I don't want to spend $15 for chicken nuggets and french fries.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which if that's what you like and that's what you want to eat, you can find that at Disney. But Disney, to your point, they just have so much more to offer. And I think, you know, we've talked about food a lot on this show. I think that's, we just like to talk about food, you know.
It's delicious.
And, dude, even last night, so my daughter was home from school and we were out to eat last night. And out of nowhere, she's like, I want to eat that cream cheese mousse at Sotuli Canteen.
Oh my gosh, that she's blueberry
like,
cream
yes,
cheese.
Yes, the blueberry oh cream cheese gosh. Mousse. And she's like, it's so pretty. I just want to, it'd be so nice to have it right now. I'm like,
yeah. All right, let's go.
I'm like, oh, my daughter, I love her. You know, that's my baby. But yeah, the food at Disney, I think if you are planning a trip and you're like, well, I don't want to go to Disney because, you know, the food isn't going to be good. It's going to be super expensive. That could not be further from the truth. And we've, and so just real fast, so here's some fun facts about Disney restaurants, okay? Do you guys know what the Michelin star is?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Walt Disney World, just recently, Victoria and Albert's was the first theme park restaurant ever to receive a Michelin star. So Victoria and Albert's there at Disney World, the first theme park restaurant
at the Grand Floridian.
At the Grand Floridian in the country to receive a Michelin star. Now, great, that's a very hard reservation to get.
Gusto, he's going to be very disappointed.
It's going to set you back $300-$400. All right. And actually, as a matter of fact, that restaurant is a five diamond award winner for like the past
25 years. It's up there.
It's up there. Yeah.
I was trying to find I can't even find the words to describe it, just because in terms of, I'm still even processing in my mind of, hey, yeah, this is a theme park, right? This is a resort area of the theme park, and trying to figure out a way to describe the fact that it is fine dining and that it's available there. That's crazy.
Fine dining. And that's actually a Kappa Spanish Steakhouse at the Four Seasons there at Disney is also a Michelin star restaurant.
There you go.
Yeah. California Grill is a diamond award winning restaurant there at the Grand Floridian.
Yeah.
Okay. Many of the Disney Springs restaurants have James Beard award winning chefs.
Oh yeah.
Disney Springs has some amazing, let's remove the T-Rex from the equation.
No volcano.
That's okay. That's a great family establishment, but if you're looking for good food, I wouldn't go there.
I mean, don't forget, the Iron Chef has a restaurant there in Disney Springs in Morimoto Asia, right?
There you go. And that's a restaurant that's highly rated and highly awarded.
And I have eaten there, and it's excellent.
I've eaten at the Wolfgang Puck place there, which was good. You know, just great food. And I think to your point, like we talked about Sotuli Canteen.
Yeah, but let's talk about the parks themselves for a second, right? We've gone ad nauseum into detail about the food options available at Epcot. You're never going to go to a theme park with better food options, I think, than you have at Epcot, despite what some of you guys thought when we did that ranking episode. Okay, but the variety, the breadth, the options and stuff, you know, you cover all of the palates, almost as many of the cuisines you possibly can. There's something there for everyone, but, you know, it's not the only one. You know, the only park that, and I think we've all been in agreement on this for a while, the only park that really is a little bit weak on your food options is going to be the Magic Kingdom. And I think that's offset by the fact that you've got three resorts that are within very, very quick and easy travel distance that do have great food options available.
Yeah, and I think if you do your research before you go, you like, I know this is a big thing for you, Randy, is to go grab some pulled pork nachos at the Polynesian.
Yep.
We're going to take half an hour, go over there, eat some food, and come back. And I think if you know where to go, you can find absolutely great food without really interrupting your day a whole lot.
Yep.
So, anyway... Like I said, we talk about food a lot on this podcast, so let's just look at our figures.
Yeah, three guys. We're going to talk about food.
Yeah,
that's right.
Donuts were on the menu this morning before the podcast.
I didn't get this handsome on accident.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so lie number three has been debunked. The food is not good. All right, number four. I don't want to stand in line all day, only to ride three rides. I hear that. Yeah. I see that online. That's something I see online a lot. And I think there's some trolls out there that just like to stir the pot. They like to get views on their Instagram reels. And, you know, I came to Disney today and I waited in line all day to ride three or four rides. Well, yeah, you're doing it wrong.
That's I think that's the response is like, well, what was your plan? Like,
exactly.
What were you trying to do? Were you trying to only stand in three lines? Because listen, I do think it's true. You can go and just spend the whole day in two or three lines, depending on what you decide to do and how you plan it out. But what Disney has done is it's made it so easy and accessible from a data perspective to understand what's going on that it allows you to plan your day. And not only that, but the introduction of the Disney Genie allows you to actually literally have Disney plan a day for you to help you not spend time solely standing in lines. And that includes seeing attractions. That includes putting in your food. Like, you can make your own trip plan on just the Disney Genie app for free to say, hey, this is what I want my day to look like. Now, the regular Disney Genie app does not allow you to book a lightning lane. It doesn't allow you to skip lines. I'm just talking about, this is a trip planner feature that they offer up for free. Which they should have called something different, or they should have called Genie Plus something different so that there wasn't so much confusion. That's a big issue, right? It's not a lie that sometimes it can be confusing. That is true. Yeah. But there's tools, there's options, there's resources available to help you actually plan out a pretty big day. We've had this discussion actually on this episode, right? What would the perfect day look like? And then I went out and did it. and it can be done, and you can get so much done in a day. It's unbelievable. And that's even during busy seasons.
And I think with... Go ahead.
I'll say my point in just
and I
a
think
second.
With, you know, to your point, Randy, with, you know, the invention of virtual queues, lightning lanes, yep. Genie Plus, and I think, too, even Disney has made waiting in line, you know, comfortable. The queues are really... most of the queues, I would say, are charming. You know, they're cute. They're conducive to waiting. If you have to wait for an hour to an hour and a half, like, you're not at some state fair zigzagging through roped off lines in a field.
Walking on dirt.
Yeah, walking on dirt. Like, that's not what Disney is. Like, they have some really, really charming queues that if I have to wait for an hour, I don't mind. You know, it's fun. And I, you know, to your point, I know Randy's talked about this before. It's like, they're missing an opportunity to make money by having us wait in lines. That's a whole other subject. But, you know, I just think that, you know, if you're going to Disney and if you're spending your time waiting in line, then you are 100% doing it wrong. There is no reason why you can't go to Disney on a crowded day and still get in most of the things that you want to do.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
Well, my point was going to be is kind of a different take or a different point of view is, you know, sometimes I get frustrated with people when they're like, well, we went during spring break or we went over Christmas break.
What did you
expect? And it was horrible.
Yeah. Or we went in August and it was 105 degrees.
And so I think, I mean, yes. But again, I think you have to manage your expectations. We've talked about that on the show before, too, is just, you know, like, of course it's going to be busy in spring break. Of course it's going to be busy the week of Christmas going into New Year's. Like, that is not a secret, right? Like, and I think Disney and any travel advisor or anybody who's ever been before is going to advise you that that is not the week to go. And so I, again, kind of have no sympathy or empathy for that person who's like, well, we went, you know, March 15th and it was horrible. We, you know, we stood in line all day. Well, yeah, I'm sure you did.
Can I add on to this too? Because I find this to be a really fascinating, almost social experiment. The folks that I generally tend to hear that comment from, they already know me and they know my love of Disney. And they usually never in advance ask anything about, hey, what should I do before they go? Or they literally wait till the night before or the day of and they're like, I'm at Disney, what do I do? And my managing expectations is key. If you fail to plan, you have planned to fail, right?
Yeah.
That should be your expectation is, oh, crap, we didn't do any research. We don't know how this app works. We don't know where we're supposed to go. We don't know what there is to eat. Well, it's probably going to be pretty tough, especially in the high seasons.
Which I think is funny because I think if you're planning to, like if I were to plan a trip to Europe, I don't think I would fly to Europe without a plan.
Isn't that interesting? Because nobody does that, right?
No.
They talk to everybody they know. They put it out there on Facebook or wherever, and they just say, hey, I'm going to London. What should I go and see and do? And yet they will take off like in the middle of the night and go to Disney World in the middle of spring break and come back and be like, man, it was terrible. There were so many people. We waited in all these lines. And I'm like, dude, like, even at the last minute, I could have helped you salvage most of that day.
Yeah.
Why do you feel like you got to be? And look, I think this goes back to lie number one. about it's only for kids. I think there is, for some people, this perception that because it's only for kids, it shouldn't be that difficult, or because it's only for kids, I'm afraid to put it out there that I'm going to do this to another adult.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And I think we give Disney a lot of heartache sometimes when, to your point, Randy, and I know you mentioned this too before, Dag, like Disney in a lot of ways has made things probably a little too complicated in terms of planning and, you know, getting your lightning lanes. At the same time, though, I almost wonder, like, if they didn't have any, like, if they were truly like a Six Flags park where you just show up, I don't know if that would work either. Actually, that wouldn't work at Disney. Yeah. Like, you need to be able to plan before you get there. I think that's just, it just, I think, I can't imagine it not being that way. Anyway, and that kind of leads us into lie number five, our last lie, which is, it's too crowded. Now, to your point, Dak, if you go during spring break, if you go during Christmas, it's going to be crowded. But I think to generalize that Disney World is too crowded every day of the year is 100% a lie.
Yeah, that is absolutely a lie, because there are times of the year that you can go, and I can tell you probably what they are off the top of my head right now, where you're going to not experience much of a crowd at all. End of March, beginning of April, not during spring break times, for instance. Guess what? Middle of June, I promise you, crowds are probably going to be pretty low, because the one of those things that both is and is not a lie is that it's too hot to go. Yeah, it's going to be hot. Manage your expectations. But boy, you're going to get a lot done because everyone else thinks it's hot and they don't go either, right? So crowds are very perspective-based, right? Like it is a matter of perspective. You go to a sporting event and it's going to be crowded. Like that's the whole point, right? You go to the mall at Christmas time and it's going to be crowded. Like you go anywhere and you're going to find a crowd depending on what your perspective is, right? The other day, I remember going to Shake Shack and I'm like, oh, I got to stand in a line because this place didn't have the kiosks where I could go and order it by myself, and I got to wait to go place my order in person. And I'm like, oh, it's crowded, right? There's like 15 people. So crowds are kind of what you make of it.
Yeah.
What Disney does so well is they have a flow of their parks and their ways to manage those crowds as best they can.
I don't think there's any business or venue in America that moves people better than Disney. From the time you get there, as you're driving through the gates and you're parking your car, to throughout the parks and then back to your car in the evening, they move you very, very well, and they keep the flow going. And again, I think that's an underrated or very underappreciated aspect of the Disney parks, is that they just move people so well.
And I think, I mean, so the flip side of this argument, where I see where I think people are coming from is, because, you know, I'm on tons of Facebook pages of, you know, Disney World and Disneyland tips and tricks, and just, I just like to follow those, obviously, because I'm into Disney, but I see people ask the question all the time, when is it the least crowded to go? When is it the least busiest to go? Look, the reality is that Disney is a corporation and they're a business and they want crowds. They want people there. And
year round.
Yeah, they're going to create sales we've talked about. They're going to create festivals we've talked about that will help bring in groups and crowds of people. But to say that it's too crowded, again, I think it comes down to, well, Are you strategizing as to when you're going to go? Are you open to the idea of pulling your kids out of school? Are you, you know, interested in going when it's too hot, right? Like in the middle of summer. If you're only, and this goes back to our previous topic, right? It's like, if you're only going to go during spring break or during Christmas break or Thanksgiving break, I think you're lying to yourself if you're saying, well, we went and we just didn't expect it to be that busy the week of Thanksgiving. Of course it's going to be busy, right? Everybody else is out of school too, right?
But what's amazing is the week before Thanksgiving, you'll get some of the lowest crowds you'll ever find because everyone else is anticipating that other one. It is. You're 100% right. It's about what are you willing to do and how are you willing to plan your trip?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all it comes down to, is like, it, for each of these lies that we're putting out there is like, well, what is your expectations, right? So this might be the theme of our show overall, over every show that we do, is like, what is your expectation and what are you thinking you're going to get out of Disney? If you think you're going to get this bubble environment where the temperature is always 65 degrees and there's only five other families in the park with you, like,
where is this place? I will go.
Yeah, you're just not going to get it, right? Like, and, you know, a bottle of water is 99 cents and, you know, all of these things, right? It's just, I think that.
Well, on that point, you can actually get free water whenever you want it.
True.
I mean, we didn't even talk about that, but.
Yeah. I think the other thing, and unless, Ryan, you had.
I had one more statement. So in terms of it being too crowded, did you guys catch any of the earnings report that just came out?
No. Yeah.
So Iger kind of alludes, so Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, kind of alluded to where the parks stand right now in terms of crowds. I mean, if you've been on social media for the past month or so, crowds are actually pretty down.
Yep.
Right now, everybody's posting pictures and videos of you know, short lines and whatnot. But in terms of this earnings report that just was released, Iger actually said, you know, he talked about, well, he had an analyst ask him a question about park attendance. And you know, his response was, and this I quote, first, in terms of attendance, look, what we're basically communicating is relative to post-COVID highs, things are tending to normalize. So he said that. So they are actually expecting pretty much from now through 2025.
This is kind of the new normal.
Crowds, we're going to kind of get back to those pre-COVID crowd levels, which if you remember pre-COVID, you could look at the crowd calendars out there and, oh, this is going to be a 2 or a 3. And they were pretty accurate, right? I think we're going to start seeing those crowd levels again, which if you're looking to go to Disney, fantastic. Those were fantastic crowd levels.
Yeah, I would agree for sure. The other point I was going to make is just kind of maybe just an overall view is maybe a bonus is that I think coming from three guys, right? Three dads.
Three handsome dads.
Yeah, three handsome dads. One of the big lies is that I'm too macho or it's not manly. And maybe this goes back to the kids only argument, but it's not manly for me to go to Disney and let that inner child come out of me.
Yeah.
And maybe this isn't a lie, but man, this is a topic that just irks me.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we have a lot of buddies that go hunting or go on golf trips or go on these guide trips or whatever to different venues and different, and more power to them. I just think, man, as a dad and wanting to have a strong relationship with my children, I can't think of a better environment where your guard can come down and you don't have to be the macho tough guy. You can just, you know, sit there and enjoy that moment with your kids. And Disney, I think, creates that secret sauce that allows that activity to happen. Again, I don't know if that ties into any of the lies that you were talking about, Ryan, but that was one point that I wanted to bring up is like, you don't have to be too macho to go to Disney.
I think it ties in a little bit to all of them, to tell you the truth, right? Because for some reason, I listen to the lies that we've kind of put out here, and there does seem to be an element of machismo that kind of goes into that, right? Where you kind of have this perception, and you think of it. Listen, when I tell people that I work with that I host not one but two Disney podcasts, like sometimes the look on their face,
there's looks.
Like I have to kind of prepare myself, like, am I willing to share this? Because even me, I question, like, is this going to diminish my, you know, sense of manliness or anything like that? It does not. It does not. Because then when I start to tell them about how I use Disney to my favor for financial purposes, and all of a sudden, like, I had one guy that I worked with the other day, and I told him how it works and what we do and in terms of our businesses and stuff like that. And he went home and, I mean, you know, first of all, the words out of his mouth were something I won't repeat on here, but it started with something followed with genius, right? And then he went home and he started telling all of the rest of his friends and family, and they started thinking about, well, how do we do this in terms of the things that we like? Maybe not Disney. You can see how actually this is very much, I think, a dad, pro dad, pro macho. You can do it. And you see those guys at the park, too. I mean, I'm some of the biggest ripped dudes I've ever seen in my life in person, I've seen in a Disney park.
Oh, yeah. I, you know what, dude? I love seeing the macho guys walking around Disney, you know, wearing the dad Disney shirts, you know, holding their kids' hands and doing all the fun kids. I just love that. You know, maybe there was a time years and years and years ago where I was like, yeah, kind of like you. Just do I let out this? Because it's one thing to go to Disney and wear your Disney shirt and, you know, put on your ears or whatever. It's another thing on a Saturday morning to wake up and put on your Disney shirt and go to the grocery store, right? Yeah. I stopped caring about that a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, all three of us in here are wearing Disney shirts.
That's right.
You know what? My day today, I'll probably wear my Disney shirt most of the day. And I don't care who sees me wearing my Disney. It's part of who I am. It's part of my family. It's part of who we are.
Yeah.
We just love Disney. And, you know, to your point, Dak, to say that, no, I'm too macho to let that inner child out. You're missing out. You're missing out if that's how you think.
I agree.
Yeah.
Sure.
So.
Is that it on
those,
your list?
Those are all the lies I have.
Okay.
There are probably 100 more, but we just want to talk about 5.
Well, I will say this, just my parting thoughts is like Disney World, especially, I think is one of those destinations where whatever it is that you're looking to get out of it, whether it's that amusement park environment, whether it's the festivals and the food and the arts and all of those things, I mean, even to the point of it's a resort, right? There's spas there. There's fine dining there we've talked about. There's golf courses there. You can get out of a Disney vacation everything you want out of a lot of vacations all wrapped up in one. So if you are that macho guy and you're like, well, I want to get my golf in, totally understand that. You know what? You can still take your family to Disney World. They have awesome golf courses there that you can play and then go have fun in the parks. And so I think my main argument is that they've done a really good job of appealing to a wide swath of people to help everybody have a great time at Disney.
I agree. It's awesome.
100%. Well, guys, check us out. Appreciate you being with us today. So check us out on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Hit us up on our social media accounts. If you have questions for us, let us know. And do us a favor. If you like the show, go on to Apple or Spotify. Just click on the follow button. That way you get automatically reminded when these episodes drop. We drop every Wednesday morning. And let us know what you want to hear, and we'll try to make it happen. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Take care.